the Bears have a big decision to make. Justin Fields or Caleb Williams?
Y'all got everybody coming out. What, it was like two of them? I don't think they better than Justin.
I'm a huge Justin Fields fan, and that's what makes this whole situation difficult.
Something's going on. Fields unfollowed the Bears on Instagram.
Just because you don't follow the girl on IG don't mean you're not messing with
her. It seems like everybody in the organization, are we in on him or are we out on him?
If we were to do something with Justin, like, I want to do right by him.
But I can't see myself playing in another place, but just let me know if I'm getting traded. Let me know if I'm staying. I just want it to be over.
Well, Justin Fields is no longer a Chicago Bear. We'll talk about that. But Fields wasn't the only major news of the weekend. The Bears added some offensive firepower for the quarterback they draft number one overall in Keenan Allen. Will we be hearing Williams to Allen next season? Kind of seems like it. Plus, one of the all-time greats retired. Aaron Donald's football career is over. Mina Kimes will tell you how the Rams will adjust to life without Donald. Hard to imagine. And the Cowboys finally made some moves. After a very quiet free agency week in Dallas, they won't wow you yet, but Adam Schefter's here to tell you what it all means. Welcome to NFL Live on this Monday. We're glad to have you here, and as promised, you see him right there. Adam Schefter, Dan Graziano, Mina Kimes here with you for the hour. We got a lot to get to. The Steelers had themselves a busy few days, so let's get you updated on all of that. The moves revolving around the quarterback position, so that's where we begin. It all started when they signed Russell Wilson to a one-year deal after he was released by the Broncos. Pittsburgh will only be paying him $1.2 million this season. What a discount. And two quarterbacks who started for the Steelers last season are gone. Mason Rudolph signed with the Titans, and Pittsburgh traded the 2022 first-round pick Kenny Pickett to the Eagles. And then they made another splash on Saturday night, acquiring Justin Fields from the Bears for a 2025 sixth-round pick that could become a fourth-rounder based on his playing time. Russell Wilson got on X. He said he's excited about it, sending out this tweet. Let's get it, Justin Fields. Quarterback room about to be fire emoji. Actually, I think there's three of those. That's even more fire than just one. How did the trade for Fields come together?
Lori, it was a softer market than I think a lot of people realized. There was a lot of discussion about Justin Fields being traded to various NFL cities. But the fact of the matter is, the Bears did not have a whole lot of suitors. Pittsburgh was a place that Justin Fields wanted to go. And in the end, ultimately, the Bears accommodated him by sending him to Pittsburgh for a conditional sixth-round pick in 2025. Not even in this year's draft, but next year's draft. And essentially that, I think, was where he wanted to go in the end, with all the other quarterback spots filling up over time. And Saturday, the Bears made a very quick decision to get this done rather quickly. They agreed to the deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so in the span of a week, Pittsburgh adds both Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, both at very low costs, and they completely transform their quarterback room and their offense moving forward, while Chicago moves forward with everybody now knowing that they are locked in to taking a quarterback number one, with the widespread expectation being that Caleb Williams is about to become a Chicago Bear.
All right, so we'll get to the Chicago piece of a lot of this in just a little bit, but Mina, how do you see this quarterback dynamic playing out in Pittsburgh?
It should be a competition. I mean, I've seen a lot of reporting and speculation about whose role is what. This, by the way, goes back to, you know, Kenny Pickett being traded. Did Russ come in with the starting job in hand? Was Pickett going to compete? Can Justin compete? Was he a backup? I don't care, Laura. This should be a competition, and it takes me back, actually, to 2012 when Russell Wilson was drafted by the Seahawks. Matt Flynn, for those who remember, was paid quite a bit of money, $10 million, which hilariously is even more than Russell Wilson is getting from Pittsburgh now. It seemed like it was his job in the spring. Then Wilson, the third rounder, came in and he won the job because Pete Carroll let them compete. I see zero reason why Pittsburgh shouldn't do the same thing, especially because of the upside that Fields has flashed over his stint in Chicago. I'm not saying he's guaranteed the job. I'm not saying it's his for the taking, but he should be given the opportunity to beat out Russell Wilson.
Yeah, to that point, Fields played really well, especially last season. And, you know, I do think that Tomlin is the type of coach, Graz, that would maybe let a quarterback competition happen. Do you believe Justin Fields will start a game for the Steelers this season?
Yeah, I don't think you can rule out the possibility. Look, 66 different quarterbacks started in the NFL this past year. So inevitably something happens almost everywhere.
And you have a situation here where you have Russell Wilson, who whose QBR over the last two seasons is lower than Justin Fields, the Steelers are paying about half as much as they're going to end up paying Justin Fields. I think what we saw Saturday night, the Steelers, you know, getting out in front of the questions and making sure everybody knew Russell's the starter and Fields is coming in to be the backup. I think that's important right now because you're managing Russell Wilson, and obviously he's going to have that same question as well. But you're absolutely right, Laura, about Mike Tomlin. I mean, knowing everything we know about him, how could this not be a real competition to the point where if Justin Fields is outplaying him in practice, he could take over the job?
Well, beyond that, again, they've been very quick to point out, Dan, that Russell Wilson's number one, Justin Fields is the backup. But when you talk to people around the league, the thinking is that they don't have much invested in either player. So if they felt like Russell Wilson wasn't picking up the offense, wasn't adapting, they felt like they were better off with Justin Fields, they only have a $1.2 million investment in Russell Wilson. It's not very much. So they could do whatever they want with him. And when you spoke to people around the league, they're like, yeah, they could bench him. They could release him before the season. They don't know what's going to happen. It's obviously Russell Wilson's job to win. He's set up to be the starter. But the fact of the matter is, because of the low cost of each, anything could wind up happening, even though Russell does go in as the number one.
Yeah, you know, as you guys pointed out, too, I mean, time takes its toll. Russell Wilson started every game in his first nine seasons, but he's missed multiple games in each of the last 3 years. Justin Fields right there nipping at his heels. We'll see how it all shakes out. New on NFL Live, former Steelers quarterback Kenny Pickett addressed his trade to the Eagles at his introductory press conference this afternoon.
I think the communication, is what it is. It was behind closed doors. I'm confident in the way that I handled it. I handled it the way I should have handled it. You know, it just felt like it was time from, you know, the things that transpired and, wanted to get a chance to go somewhere else and continue to grow my career. And the fact that it's in Philly, the place that I grew up, found the love for the game here with a great coaching staff, great players. I'm looking forward to meet all these guys in a couple of weeks when everyone gets back into town. But, I think it's an awesome opportunity here to join this team.
Seemingly classy all the way through by Kenny Pickett. We even saw it when he was still with the Steelers and Mason Rudolph was starting. But Adam, what more can you tell us about how this trade was handled by the Steelers and Pickett?
Well, essentially, I think Kenny Pickett saw them sign Russell Wilson, and I don't think that he particularly cared for the fact that it was described to him that he basically would be trailing Russell Wilson in the quarterback competition, that Russell Wilson would have the leg up there going into camp, that he would not be the starter heading into camp. And I think when he heard that, I think he was disappointed, and he obviously asked to be traded. And the Pittsburgh Steelers wasted no time. They found a home in Philadelphia, which Kenny Pickett was in favor of doing. He's from New Jersey, grew up an Eagles fan, knows the type of organization the Eagles have been. And as soon as essentially he asked them to trade him, they were quick to find a home. And the fact of the matter is that really set into motion the Justin Fields move. Because if Kenny Pickett wasn't unhappy and was comfortable staying, then Justin Fields still might be in Chicago today, and the Bears still would be looking to accommodate him and to find a new home. But once Kenny Pickett asked to be traded and they agreed to a deal with the Eagles on Friday afternoon, that triggered a whole series of events that led to Justin Fields then being traded to Pittsburgh to essentially take the place of Kenny Pickett, who was traded to Philadelphia after Russell Wilson had signed with Pittsburgh the week before.
Who's on first? Those quarterback dominoes start to fall pretty quickly. Let's go back to Chicago, where the Bears have made it clear that they intend to take a quarterback with the first overall pick in the draft, as Adam pointed out, clinging to the hope that the QB they choose will set them up for big success for years to come. But we all know whoever the quarterback is, cough, cough, Caleb Williams, they're going to need some help. They started that process by trading for Keenan Allen, and pairing Keenan Allen with DJ Moore will be historic for the Bears' number one pick. Moore and Allen both had over 1,200 yards last season, and no quarterback drafted in the top five has ever played their rookie season with multiple wide receivers who have had that many yards. Chicago also signed running back DeAndre Swift to give the offense another weapon. It does seem like they understand it's paramount. They have got to make this work. If Caleb Williams ends up going to the Bears, Mina, what do you think about the pieces that Chicago is already surrounding him with?
I think the Bears have put their future quarterback, Likely Williams, in a fantastic position. Before you even get to the receivers, Laura, this is an improving offensive line. I think they continue adding in the draft. A running back room that has a group of backs with really complementary skill sets. In Swift, you're adding him to Herbert and Johnson. And the tight ends, too. They signed Gerald Everett, who will join Cole Kmet. Their new offense coordinator, Shane Waldron, loves 2-3 tight end sets, so expect to see a lot of those. And now with Allen, this feels like the final and necessary piece. Of course, he is on the wrong side of 30, but he was incredibly productive last year, fourth in the NFL in receiving yards per game, a great complement to what DJ Moore does, where he gives you that downfield threat. Allen can work underneath. And perhaps most importantly, he's a quarterback's best friend. Hmm. You know, with Caleb Williams, what's going to be so important year one is getting him to play on time. And Keenan Allen, last season, on throws under 2.5 seconds, had the second highest completion percentage in football, behind only CeeDee Lamb. He will get open. He will catch the ball. And for Caleb Williams, that is tremendous. I just feel like the Bears have absolutely crushed this offseason in terms of setting him up for success.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's going to come a day when Keenan Allen's not great anymore, but I'm not comfortable predicting when that day will be. He's going to be a huge help to Caleb Williams or whoever is the quarterback there, as is DJ Moore, who had a monster season with Justin Fields. Look, the defense is good. People want to talk about, you know, is Matt Eberflus a lame duck head coach? Well, you would have said that in November, and they played well enough down the stretch that he kept his job. So they come off of a strong finish from last year, too, with a little bit of confidence. They've built out the defense. They took a lot of heat for the Montez Sweat trade at the deadline and the deal they gave him. But this is a player that they feel really works with what they want to do on defense, and Eberflus certainly has a vision for that. The Bears are in a much better spot to set up a rookie quarterback for success than they were 3 years ago when they selected Justin Fields.
And the most important thing they can do, of course, Dan, is to protect Caleb Williams. And last year, they used their first round pick on Darnell Wright. And this year, once they pick Caleb Williams, assuming that that's the guy at number one, then they can go ahead and use number nine, the number nine overall pick that's their own, on another offensive tackle. And now you've got bookend tackles for years to come to protect your franchise quarterback, in addition to all the moves that you and Mina laid out there to improve this roster. So the Bears have had a successful offseason by any measure. When you speak to people around the league, you can't help but be impressed by everything that they've done, all the talent that they've accumulated. And so here go the Bears now, I would think, looking to protect the investment that they're about to make with the number one overall pick.
Got to make it hit, and we'll see if they do that. Right now, on paper at least, it looks really, really good for Chicago. Still to come on NFL Live, is this the year that the Jets finally break back through in the AFC East? Well, a fully healed Aaron Rodgers and a revamped O-line are making those Jets poised to make a run in the AFC. Get excited, Jets fans, okay? Plus, one of the greatest defenders of all time called it a career over the weekend. We'll talk about the Rams filling that void.
Come on. Oh, my God.
Mina, how does it feel to know that Aaron Donald no longer going to play the Seahawks twice a year?
Amazing. Though Gino has denied that that voice was his. I want to represent him correctly. But whoever said it was correct.
Yeah, Gino, we can't be throwing that shade on him. You're right. We'll be right back.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
For me, it's about winning. I don't want to play football if I can't win anyway.
And we set the tone from the first play to the last play.
Aaron Donald is a once-in-a-generation type of talent.
Oh, my God!
He had done everything that you can do in the game. I mean, he was dominating week in and week out.
Aaron, this is the moment, right now. We're world champs.
You make that play.
We're world champs.
You make that play.
It's a blessing. Anytime you accomplish something, it's a blessing.
Aaron Donald is among the most accomplished defensive players in NFL history. He was a first-team All-Pro 8 times and was a 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, tied with Lawrence Taylor and J.J. Watt for the most in NFL history. Donald and Barry Sanders, the only players to play at least 10 seasons and get selected to the Pro Bowl in each year. We start with you, Adam. How early did the Rams know they had a special player in Donald?
Laura, I remember his very first training camp getting a text message from somebody within the Rams organization at one of his very first practices, and it was a very simple text. It just said, and here's the tweet that we posted 10 years ago, Aaron Donald is unreal. And a lot of the comments were like, well, of course the team thinks he's unreal. They think all their rookies are unreal. Well, that tweet aged very well. There are many tweets that don't. That one in particular did, because that player wreaked havoc for all 10 years that he was in the National Football League. His next stop is Canton, Ohio, but I distinctly remember that day and the impression that he made on the people in that organization early on. And it didn't stop. It just continued throughout his entire NFL career until he officially announced his retirement on Friday.
Yeah, that's a Hall of Fame tweet right there, too, Adam. I've had a few end up on that freezing cold takes, but not that one. Mina, how did the Rams defensively try to adjust to life after Donald? It's hard to even imagine their defense without him.
Yeah, speaking of things that aged well, last year, Aaron Donald finished first in the NFL in pass rush win rate amongst defensive tackles. The definition of going out on top. And what that means is he leaves a huge hole, of course, in the defense he leaves behind. Now, that defense was much better than many people, myself included, frankly, expected last season, given the youth. They finished about average in most metrics. Which is a testament to the work that Raheem Morris did. Of course, he leaves to become a head coach, but also the young players that they drafted. Kobe Turner played next to Aaron Donald, was fantastic up front for them. Byron Young. And the Rams made some nice additions, too, in free agency on the back end, bringing in Cam Curl as a really talented young safety, and Darius Williams, a reunion there at corner. My feeling is because of those additions, they need to focus on that front. Turner and Young are super talented, but Donald had a force multiplier on that defensive line, so they're going to have to continue stocking up on that pass rush, finding another 3-4 defensive end. There's a couple of really good names in the draft. I like Byron Murphy a lot out of Texas, Johnny Newton out of Illinois, and I think if either of them were there for the Rams, that would be a perfect, perfect draft pick.
Yeah, look, they have a lot to do. You mentioned, Mina, the loss of Raheem Morris, now the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. And all you have to do is look at last year's Philadelphia Eagles to see the potential impact coordinator turnover can have. So there'll be somebody else shepherding this young defense into the future without Aaron Donald. And it's cause for some concern, but this is the Rams and Sean McVay. They're used to losing coordinators to head coach jobs, so they'll probably be fine. Aaron Donald's going to be the one that's tough to replace. My favorite story is one year I was at their training camp and he was holding out, and Les Snead, their GM, told me he was actually kind of okay with it because once Donald showed up, that was bad for the confidence of the offensive lineman. He wasn't kidding.
That's a good one. And by the way, Mina, you mentioned the draft. The Rams had that 19th overall pick. They could make a first-round pick for the first time since 2016 when they took Jared Goff first overall. McVay famously referenced the lack of first-round picks. It hadn't been a problem. Anyway, coming up on NFL Live, Patrick Mahomes has a new toy in KC. Can Hollywood Brown help bring the Flash back to this once powerhouse offense? I mean, they're still winning Super Bowls, but Mina thinks this could be the addition KC needed to be even more dominant. We'll be right back.
Hey,
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The inaugural United Football League season kicks off March 30th, featuring 21 matchups on ESPN, ESPN2, and ABC. With everyone on ESPN+, our games begin Sunday, March 31st, with a doubleheader on ESPN. The D.C. Defenders take on the San Antonio Brahmas at noon Eastern. Then the Houston Roughnecks host the Memphis Showboats. Spring football is back, folks. Don't miss it. Hey, the reigning Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs have been adamant about a three-peat. Look at that guy there. Well, that's Hollywood. He's taken that Hollywood sign right to Kansas City. They were looking to fill a few holes, and they were able to add some speed and talent to their offense, signing Hollywood Brown. As we told you, new on NFL Live, Brown spoke moments ago about why he decided to join the Chiefs.
When the Chiefs are interested in you, it's like, all right, you gotta take a look at that. I mean, of course, you know, I can go get, you know, some money, you know, at other places, but at the end of the day, you know, it's about winning. It's about, you know, what I want. And I feel like everything just worked out, you know, the way it should. I'm happy with the decision.
Well, Brown should give Patrick Mahomes some wide receiver depth to go along with Rashee Rice. Mahomes was locked in throwing to Rice last season, completing 77% of his targets to the rookie with 6 touchdowns. Got better as the season went along, but that dropped to 57%, throwing to all other wideouts with more interceptions than touchdowns. Certainly a topic of conversation for us, talking about how he needed some help. And Mina, what do you think about the fit of Brown specifically in this Chiefs offense?
I absolutely love this for Kansas City. You know, you mentioned that Rashee Rice really broke out for Patrick Mahomes, the number one wide receiver. Hollywood Brown on the field, stretching the field, forcing defenses to go back to playing that too high, those too high shells that Mahomes used to face all the time with Tyreek Hill. That'll just create more opportunities for Rice to get yards after the catch, which was his specialty. I think this is a low risk, super high upside move for Kansas City, and it gives them some flexibility in the draft. There's less pressure to take a receiver with that pick 32. Maybe you go cornerback, see what happens with Jarius Sneed, who Adam's going to talk about. But you have a reliable veteran receiver, a true deep threat. Just makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, perfect tee up there for Jarius Sneed. Obviously, they needed to pay Chris Jones. We knew that would be a focus, but that means Jarius Sneed was franchise tagged by Kansas City earlier this offseason. What is the latest, Adam, on his situation?
Well, Laura, it's a situation where basically the Chiefs now have gone through almost a full week and nobody has gotten a deal done with Jarius Sneed. And the Chiefs are prepared, if they have to move forward with Jarius Sneed playing on a one-year deal. That's not what he would want to do. He would like to land a contract that conceivably could make him the highest paid cornerback in all of football. He's played himself into that position. But so far, there has not been a team out there that's willing to both satisfy the Chiefs with the proper compensation and Jarius Sneed. Now, getting a contract done with Sneed seems to be the easiest part, and there seems to be consensus that he would become the highest paid cornerback in the league, but there has to be a team that makes an offer compelling enough to Kansas City to make the Chiefs want to trade him. And right now, that hasn't happened. There have been people that speculated the Colts and Chiefs could be closing in. My understanding from both sides is the two sides haven't even spoken. So the Colts and Jarius Sneed don't seem to be an option at this time. Never know if something could come up later. But to date, the two sides haven't spoken, and we wait to see if there's a team, any team, that steps up to meet the Chiefs' price and Sneed's price together.
Yeah, as you see on the screen, they have until July 15th to reach a long-term deal. All right, a must-read every week during the season. Dan Graziano overreactions, you guys. A special free agency edition is now on ESPN.com. Go check that out. Let's put the man to work and look at some of the scenarios. We're going to start in Houston after a flurry of moves in free agency. Graz, is it an overreaction to say the Texans are a real threat to Kansas City and the AFC?
It's not an overreaction. Look, I mean, the Chiefs are the favorites, and they've earned that over and over again. But when you talk about teams that can push them, I think Houston jumps right into the mix here in C.J. Stroud's second season. They hit free agency hard. They signed a lot of guys to fortify their defensive front, the biggest of which is Danielle Hunter. They get Joe Mixon from the Bengals, and they're trying to replicate what the Bengals did in Joe Burrow's second year, which was go all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Completely agree with Dan about the Houston Texans. C.J. Stroud excelling the way he did his rookie year really turbocharged their timeline, because what seemed to be a rebuilding team very quickly became a contending team. And the actions that they took this offseason, particularly on the defense, suggests they know that, and they're trying to take advantage of C.J. Stroud's rookie contract by signing stars like Danielle Hunter. I really love what they're doing.
Let's stay with another AFC contender, the Ravens. Graz, is it an overreaction to say that Derrick Henry will put the Ravens into the Super Bowl next season?
I think it is. I actually think there's a better chance that the Ravens take a little bit of a step back when you look at everything they've lost. You can argue that Derrick Henry doesn't need an offensive line, but the fact is they've lost three offensive linemen so far in free agents, or two free agent, one trade. They lost some key pieces on defense. They lost three members of their defensive coaching staff, including the coordinator, who's now the Seahawks head coach. There is going to be a lot of new in Baltimore next year. Derrick Henry is part of it, but he's not the solution, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm of two minds of this. You know, I agree with Dan that I don't think Derrick Henry is the piece that puts him over the top. This is already a dominant run game. I like the signing. I like the fit. But they can only be so much better on the ground. I think where I quibble a little bit with Dan is those losses. A lot of the players who the Ravens lost in free agency are still available. I believe Kevin Zeitler, the starting guard, is yet to be signed, unless I'm mistaken. Kyle Van Noy, Jadeveon Clowney. The Ravens have a history of bringing in veteran pass rushers at the last second in free agency, and then they play really well for them. I wouldn't be surprised if the same thing happens again this year with this defense.
Let's keep an eye on that. And to the Jets, who are desperately doing what they can to set up Aaron Rodgers for more success next season, they added Tyron Smith to their offensive line in a concerted effort to strengthen protection in front of Rodgers when we should finally get to see him really play. Now, the Jets also signed guard John Simpson and traded for right tackle Morgan Moses to go along with Tyron Smith. They'll have three new starters on that offensive line that was 30th in the NFL in pass block win rate last season. Zach Wilson really was the guy who dealt with the brunt of that. But Adam, what more can you tell us about how the Jets went about addressing their offensive line?
Laura, this has been the focus of this team going into the offseason. It was no secret that they had to upgrade the offensive line and upgrade it dramatically, particularly with Aaron Rodgers coming back off the torn Achilles. And so they went out and they addressed it right away. John Simpson in free agency to play the left guard position. They go and trade for Morgan Moses, who was on the Jets roster before and who the team really wanted back. And they swapped some picks and got him back. And then they get Tyron Smith to play left tackle. They bring back Elijah Vera Tucker, who they're hoping is healthy next season. Their former second-round pick, Joe Tippmann at center. Now they've got what they believe are to be five quality starters to place in front of Aaron Rodgers. And now we go into the draft, and if there's another offensive lineman, they always could add more depth by signing Tyron Smith. It now gives them a little bit of added flexibility in the draft. They're not locked into taking an offensive tackle. Maybe they look at a wide receiver. Maybe they look at another position, but they don't have to come out of the first round with another offensive lineman with all these moves.
Yeah, depth at O-line, especially with an older quarterback, can always help. You know, what do you think of the Jets' plan for their offensive line so far?
I mean, that offensive line you saw there, that's a really good offensive line. Like, we talk a lot about protecting Aaron Rodgers. Something that occurs to me looking at that group is how happy Breece Hall should be, because he had terrible run blocking last year. And you want to talk about those Ravens players that they got, did a fantastic job run blocking. Simpson was particularly a revelation for me last year. But, and there is a but, you know, I said that group is excellent if they're healthy, right? Tyron Smith has suffered through injuries quite a bit over the course of his career. He played a fair amount last year. To Adam's point, I do think it would be wise for New York to continue augmenting this line, especially with Whip Smith on a one-year deal in the draft, especially given how many talented offensive tackles there are. Even if that tackle they draft doesn't start year one, it would be wise for them to continue adding in a group that has been such an issue for them in the past.
No question about it. Look, I mean, Tyron Smith is going to be great for the Jets when he's on the field. The question is, how many times will he be on the field? 2015 is the last year in which Tyron Smith played a full season without missing any games due to injury. That is a long time ago. Now, the question is, what kind of year is this at age 33? Because he's had years where he's played 13 games, and he's had years where he's played 2 games or 4 games. If he misses significant time, they need to have a great backup plan. If he's going to miss 2 or 3 games, I think they can weather that, and the high-end production they'll get from him while he's on the field is certainly worth it. Look, it's a bit of a high wire act with a couple of 33-year-old tackles, but they're good. And let's face it, everything the Jets are doing right now is a high wire act around 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers trying to win as quickly as possible before, you know, everybody goes their own separate ways.
That was funny the way you ended that. I was interested to see what you're going to say. All right.
I don't really know how to end it.
Yeah. Oh, neither do I. I do want to point this out. They do have the 10th overall pick. So if they ended up going with an offensive lineman, the Jets haven't drafted an O-lineman in the top 10 since taking DeBrickashaw Ferguson, 4th overall in 2006. We'll see if they change that up this year. Still ahead on NFL Live with Captain Kirk, no longer in Minnesota. The Vikings making moves for draft capital. Are they looking to break into the top 5 to find their quarterback of the future? We'll explain a recent move that tells a whole lot and see what their plans may be going forward. More NFL Live on ESPN after this. The next UFC Fight Night features the much-anticipated women's flyweight main event. The prelims begin Saturday at 7 Eastern, followed by the main card at 10 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and ESPN Plus. New on NFL Live, the Falcons tweeting that Kirk Cousins will wear number 18 in Atlanta. Remember, Cousins has worn number 8 for most of his career, but Kyle Pitts has the number in Atlanta. Cousins said during his introductory presser that if Pitts was okay giving up the number, he would open up his checkbook. Pitts responded with, "I just want targets every game." So we'll keep an eye on 18-8 in that connection this season. This is now the 3rd jersey number that Kirk Cousins has worn in his NFL career. All right, the Vikings could be in the market for a quarterback in the next month's draft, and Minnesota acquired an additional first-round pick on Friday. This is important. The Vikings traded 3 picks to the Texans, including 2 second-rounders, to get Houston's 23rd overall pick this year. Minnesota now has 2 first-round picks to potentially move into the top 10. Adam, what are you hearing about Minnesota's plan for their 2 first-round picks at this point?
Well, my understanding is that Houston went to Minnesota with that proposal initially, and Minnesota was only too happy to do it because now it gives them the ammunition that they would need if they choose to try to move up even further to go get a quarterback. With picks number 11 and number 23, they would be in a prime spot, depending on how the draft goes and which quarterbacks fall, to move up if there was a quarterback like J.J. McCarthy that they identified, that they liked, that they wanted to aggressively pursue. By having 2 ones, they now have the capital that they need to go get one of these guys if that's what they decide is in the best long-term interest of the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, it's interesting because what Minnesota does depends not just on what Minnesota wants, but also on the willingness of the trade partners above them. First, you start with the top 3, whether any of those teams, really, you know, Washington or New England at 2 and 3, would be willing to move off their quarterbacks for a haul. Increasingly, it seems probably not. And then when you get to talking about J.J. McCarthy, as Adam alluded to, how high would the Vikings have to go to get him if they love him? Would they have to go above New York, potentially trading with, say, the Chargers at 5? Is J.J. McCarthy worth that much to them? What would that even take? We haven't seen a move like that because the Lance deal, you know, Lance went higher than that. I'm not so sure. You'd have to get a sense of not just Minnesota's evaluation of potentially McCarthy, but the teams that they would be competing with for. And it feels like between now and April, Adam, we're going to get a lot more information about that, because as you remember, just a month ago, I don't even think J.J. McCarthy was being talked about in this conversation.
I wanted to see if Adam wanted to respond. Adam, you have anything to add there?
Well, I was told you were going next, Laura, but yes, I am happy that you gave me that opening, because
come on, give me something.
I've always thought of J.J. McCarthy as a first-round pick. Went so far as to bet my college buddies back in December a dinner amongst our group of friends that he would be a high one, and it looks like I feel pretty good about cashing in on that bet, Laura.
All right. So, Adam, whenever they're taking you to dinner, we'll find out exactly where you go. But anyway, either way, as Mina just laid out, really interesting to watch. And right now, I would have to say it does feel like the Chargers would be the team to maybe be a trade partner because they don't need a quarterback. Time now for some top stories, starting with an extension in Buffalo. Adam, what more can you tell us?
Yeah, the Buffalo Bills made Taron Johnson today the highest paid nickelback in the NFL, giving him a 3-year, $31 million extension. It ties him to Buffalo through the 2027 season. You remember last week, the Buffalo Bills went out and re-signed their left tackle, Deion Dawkins, now locked down another young player that they'd like to have in Buffalo for years to come. Taron Johnson officially gets that deal done. Now, there continue to be questions about Stephon Diggs tweeting out his unhappiness, people interpreting his messages. How long has this been going on? It feels like it's been going on forever. Essentially, he's in a situation where his salary cap, his base salary for this year is $18.5 million. The Bills have continued to say they don't plan to move him. That's not in the cards for them. And again, Stephon Diggs doesn't seem all that thrilled right now. The former Ravens wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., big goodbye to Baltimore over the weekend publicly. No surprise to anybody. Most people thought he'd be moving on from there, finding a new home this upcoming season. I think he wanted the ball a little bit more last year than he actually got it, especially in that playoff game when he felt like he was poised to have a big game and it didn't happen against the Kansas City Chiefs. He'll be moving on. And we'll find out whether Mike Williams, also the former Chargers wide receiver, is moving on. He's scheduled to arrive in New Jersey tonight to visit with the Jets on Tuesday, scheduled to visit them with the Carolina Panthers, the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Chargers also have some degree of interest in bringing him back now that they've traded Keenan Allen to the Chicago Bears. And so it looks like Mike Williams, who's coming off that ACL injury, who may not be ready till this summer, has a lot of different quality options to choose from. He's obviously right now the top wide receiver on the board, and we'll see shortly where he winds up.
Yeah, assuming Mike Williams signs with a new team, Justin Herbert and the Chargers will lose the three players with the most yards from scrimmage since drafting him in 2020. Austin Eckler and Keenan Allen are the top two players on that list for them. And 96% of Herbert's career passes have been thrown with at least one of those three in the game. It's going to look totally different for Justin Herbert. Either way, Gross, how concerned are you about the loss of production on this Chargers offense?
I mean, look, they're going to need some guys. I mean, like Quentin Johnston still has a ways to go, last year's first-round pick at wide receiver, and they lost their top two wide receivers. They traded one of them. They move on from running back Austin Eckler. They bring in Gus Edwards. Is he a guy that can be a workhorse running back, or do they need to add at that position as well? So they need to rebuild the skill position group around Justin Herbert, at least add some bodies so they can figure this out. We knew all along they were going to have salary cap constraints that were going to damage the roster from what it was last year to what it's going to be next year. It's been maybe a little more extensive than people might have anticipated, but yeah, they need to start looking for some receivers and some backs.
Yeah, Dan's absolutely right. I think, though, the Chargers are in a really interesting and potentially divisive spot in the draft, because on one hand, you hear us saying this receiving group clearly needs help after parting ways with Allen and Williams. And at pick five, after three quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, I think the assumption is Arizona most likely will take a receiver. They will have their pick of potentially Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. or Romo Odunze. It's fantastic, right? Need aligns with best player available. Wonderful. However, there's a lot of needs on this Chargers roster, going beyond receiver, the offensive line, tight end, defensive line, cornerback. And if a team like, say, the Vikings that we just talked about were to come up and say, hey, we will give you a haul for pick five, I have to think they would seriously consider it, even though it might mean potentially passing on a blue chip receiver. So for me, it really would depend on what the trade offer is. Those receivers are that good, but they have to consider it given all of the holes on this Chargers roster.
Yeah, and as we continue to make trades happen here on NFL Live, how badly do the Vikings feel like they maybe need to get there or maybe another team? I do want to point this out. The Chargers made the fifth overall pick four previous times. Two of those guys, Hall of Famers, Junior Seau and LaDainian Tomlinson. So they've had some success with that fifth overall pick. Different year, though. All right, it's been a quiet free agency so far in Jerry's world. Is Dak going to get an extension, or could Dallas be thinking about an exit plan for their current QB1? Remember, their coach is also on the same contract schedule as him. Shefty has the latest news from the Cowboys next. You don't want to miss this. We'll be right back on NFL Live.
I would anticipate, with looking ahead at our key contracts that we'd like to address, we'll be all in. I would anticipate we'll be all in at the end of this year. We'll be going all in on different people than you've done in the past.
All right, Jerry Jones' definition of all in may be different from some Cowboys' definition of all in, or maybe Cowboys fans, I should say. But a couple of moves came out of Dallas over the weekend. Linebacker Leighton Vander Esch retired. They also released wide receiver Michael Gallup. Now all eyes turn to Dak and his contract. So, Adam, what more can you tell us about his situation?
Well, Laura, as Field Yates reported today, he's reworked his contract, but it's a situation where he still has not gotten the long-term extension, and he's still sitting on the Cowboys' books for over $55.5 million, so it's still a big number. And the fact of the matter is, that is really stifling to their salary cap, and Jerry Jones says they're all in, but the fact of the matter is, basically, they can't do a lot because of that number, and they're in a situation where after this year, Dak Prescott can become a free agent, he can't be tagged, he can't be traded. So this becomes a real quandary that's only going to grow in stature as time goes on.
Yeah, reallocating $4 million of the $59 million that they're dealing with there. Mina, what do you think about the Cowboys not committing to a long-term deal with Dak? It has to say something, right?
Yeah, we'll see. There's still time left. I just can't help but marvel at how much leverage Dak Prescott has. Like, we talk a lot about Kirk Cousins being a legend at the bank because of the way, you know, he played things out with the tag and then getting those guaranteed deals. Dak Prescott has followed a fairly similar, not exactly the same, playbook. Because think about this, Laura. Kirk Cousins this year signed a contract as a true free agent for 4 years, $180 million. If Dak Prescott had been a free agent this offseason, $50 million a year, easily. If he's a free agent next year, I can only imagine the kind of money he were to get if he were to play next year at the same level he played at during the regular season. I realize that's an operative word, that phrase there, this year. And to that end, there's no reason why he should take any sort of discount from the Dallas Cowboys, especially given, as you guys laid out, his contract does, and the current cap hit does prevent them from doing certain signings and spending their money. From Dallas's perspective, I'll say this. The likelihood that they would move on from Dak Prescott and improve at the quarterback position is very, very low. Coming off of this show where we're talking about how desperate Minnesota is now and the kind of trades they'd be making, and it's still just a shot in the dark in the draft, Dallas has one of those quarterbacks that every team wants. And so I feel like they should be motivated to get something done. I don't know if they will based on how this is dragged out. And Dak Prescott has all the leverage in the world.
Yeah, there is time. Look, the $5 million they converted over the weekend, there was a deadline on that. That was a roster bonus. And if it had triggered, they wouldn't have been able to convert that money. They still have almost $28 million in salary this year that they could knock down and convert into bonus if they did a restructure. The problem is every time you do a restructure, it adds to the 2025 cap charge, which is already up to $40 million, and they don't want that to get any bigger. So I think the interesting point here is they added two void years to the contract. They could not do that without Dak Prescott's permission. So at least we know they're talking and that he was willing to accommodate them to that extent. I think the news of today of the roster bonus being restructured makes me more optimistic that they might get to an extension at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like last week, even in the heat of free agency, there were, really wasn't much conversation around any of it. And once again, you got to think they got to pay CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons. There are other players that they're going to have to take care of. Either way, we'll keep an eye on what's happening in Dallas. Mina said it best. It's the great play in the regular season and the maybe not as great play in the postseason. You can't blame Dak for all that. And I'm glad I got to just say all of that to end the show, but it's because we didn't have enough time to let anybody else in. We'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live. Thanks for joining us today.